This is Jay Sekulow. It's decision day for the Supreme Court.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
I'm getting very close to making a final decision. I believe this person will do a great job, but I'm very close to making a decision. Have not made it official yet, obviously. Have not made it final. Let's say it's the four people, but and they're excellent. Everyone, you can't go wrong.
Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110.
Talk about Brett Kavanaugh, Amy Barrett, Thomas Hardiman, Raymond Catholic, who I assume are the four.
Those are the four,
to.
Yeah.
Look, they're all extraordinarily distinguished people. Certainly, Brett Kavanaugh and Amy Barrett have a lot of name recognition amongst supporters of the president, amongst people. And I think that ultimately, when people like them are nominated, you'll see a lot of folks line up.
And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
Well, welcome to the broadcast, everyone. We're taking your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. That's 800-684-3110. It is decision day. That means the president at 9 o'clock this evening Eastern Time will be making his announcement as to the next Supreme Court nominee. There are four that are in the kind of final runnings of all this. Judge Kethledge, Judge Hardiman, Judge Kavanaugh, and Judge Barrett. And Judge Amy Barrett out of the Seventh Circuit, Hardiman out of the Third, Kethledge out of the Sixth, and Brett Kavanaugh on the D.C. Circuit. Now, here's something you need to know from the outset. There's a lot of discussion this weekend about who's discussing the Supreme Court and who has the influence on the Supreme Court nominee. And people are saying, is it the Heritage Foundation? Is it the Federalist Society? Is it all of them? Is it us? Here's the fact. The fact is, and Andy's going to go through this, I think it's very important for people to understand this. This is a decision that rests with the President of the United States constitutionally. So while you seek, any president would seek input on that decision, including from his White House counsel and the Department of Justice, ultimately that decision is one that rests with the president per the United States Constitution. Andy?
Yes, if we read the Constitution, which we should do, begin and end with the Constitution, it says, by and with the advice and consent of the Senate, and then add in, the president shall appoint ambassadors, other public ministers and consuls, judges of the Supreme Court. We now call them justices, but the Constitution says judges and all other officers of the United States whose appointments are not herein otherwise provided for, which shall be established by law. In other words, it is ultimately, under the Constitution, the choice of one person and one person alone, and that is the president.
That's correct. So let me go up to Than Bennett in Washington, D.C. We are now on decision day. At 9 o'clock tonight, the decision will be announced. Dan, what are you hearing in Washington? I don't want to get into the individual nominee on who the nominee will be, but on the process. We know that it will get intense about 9:03, 3 minutes after the president makes the announcement.
That's right, and the process really has been underway for the Senate Judiciary Committee for a couple of weeks now. I mean, obviously, the president gave them a head start with this list that he put out, so they have had a basis from which to work from. But, Jay, process-wise, they've already added high-level staff to prepare for these hearings. As soon as that name is announced by the president of the United States, they will begin the very laborious job of gathering all the biographical data on this nominee, preparing for the hearings. And by the way, Jay, whoever this nominee is, he or she has a big job ahead of them as well, not just preparing for Senate meetings, but preparing to comply with document requests, preparing to go before the Senate Judiciary Committee for 3 days of hearings. So process-wise, that really ramps up about 9:03. The preparation phase is now coming to a close. It will ramp up tonight, like you said, about 9:03 p.m.
The lasting legacy of the president is their Supreme Court picks. The president tweeted that out, but that is actually also fact. And he's right about that, that there's no question that the lasting legacy of any president is in part their Supreme Court picks. So this president will now have his second pick in less than 19 months. All right, we're taking your phone calls. We want to know from you what you're looking for in a Supreme Court nominee. What are the issues that matter most to you? We're taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110. 1-800-684-3110. Don't forget, we're in a matching challenge campaign at ACLJ.org. Any amount you donate to us, we're going to get a matching gift for ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org. And again, what are you looking for in a pick to the Supreme Court of the United States? We'll take your calls and comments on that at 1-800-684-3110. That's 800-684-3110. We'll be back with more right after this break. Big day in Washington, D.C. The life of an American pastor hangs in the balance. Pastor Andrew Brunson is on trial in Turkey. As you know, Pastor Andrew is facing charges of, quote, Christianization, on trial for simply living out his Christian faith. He could spend the rest of his life in a Turkish prison. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're aggressively advocating for Pastor Andrew's freedom. We've mobilized our international offices. We're working directly with the State Department and alongside members of Congress. The Vice President is involved, and we've submitted a critical legal document to the United Nations. Stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. Fight for the freedom of Pastor Andrew. It's time to bring an end to this sham trial. It's time for Pastor Andrew to come home. Add your name to our petition right now online at aclj.org. It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble. Hey, welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. So here's what happens tonight at 9 o'clock. The President of the United States makes his announcement as to his nominee to the Supreme Court. I'm supposed to be on with Sean Hannity right after that announcement is made. So I'll keep you posted on that, assuming that takes place. And then as far as my appearance, they're always, if these things go late, you end up going into the next program and you're not on that one. So it depends on how long that whole process goes. The president will make an announcement. The nominee will make usually makes a statement thanking the president for the nomination. And then the fight begins. But I want to go to CeCe and then to Harry on this. We talked about this during the break. But CeCe, when I ask this question, we're taking your calls at 800-684-3110. What are you looking for in a Supreme Court justice as far as judicial philosophy goes?
Yeah, the most important thing is that they are strict constructionists, that they follow the words of the Constitution. They're bound by that. They're not creating law. They are literally bound by what the Constitution says.
Yeah, and so, Harry, we use the phrase strict constructionists, originalists, textualists for a radio audience. So how would you define it?
Looking at the words of the Constitution and applying the Constitution based on the original meaning of those words, as opposed to importing new living constitutionalism, which is the favorite of academics from Yale, Harvard, and elsewhere.
Okay, so here's the question that's coming in. We're taking your calls at 800-684-3110, but this is interesting. Phyllis on Facebook. Do you think Republicans will stand together in support of the nominee? Go to Jordan and Than on this, because here's what you've got. The announcement's going to be made at 9 o'clock. At 9:02, the press releases are going out, and the war begins. How big of a political issue is this?
Well, I think for Republicans, there's only a couple that would be in question, and they've already kind of told you that. Susan Collins, who leans more to the pro-abortion side from Maine, and Lisa Murkowski from Alaska. Other than those two, and it really depends on who the nominee is. We've discussed those thoroughly throughout the weeks leading up to this on the broadcast. Other than those two, I think that you've got the Republicans lining up very firmly behind. And it only, I think, maybe one or two of these nominees would cause those two to be in question. That being said, I think there's at least a couple of Democrats who would come on board who may be actually more conservative on that life issue, or at least they tell their constituents they are. People like Joe Manchin, you think about in North Dakota, you think Heitkamp, all these John Tester in Montana. You go through those folks, and then you get a few of those.
What does Doug Jones in Alabama do?
Doug Jones and of course, in Missouri, Claire McCaskill.
Yeah. So here's what you've got, though, Than. I'm going to play this in a moment. This is Senator Durbin was on some of the Sunday shows, was on with Chuck Todd on NBC. But let me ask you this, Than. The politics of this start immediately. Well, they've already started, but, I mean, as soon as the announcement's made, it starts.
Oh, absolutely. And the grassroots war that will be waged will be very loud, a lot of money spent, Jay. But Jordan's absolutely right about the universe of senators you're looking at. And I would just point people, as it refers to Senator Collins and Senator Murkowski, to two very recent votes, for Neil Gorsuch and Amy Barrett for the Seventh Circuit. Jay, they both voted for both of them in both instances just a matter of months ago. So I think every Republican senator is going to align behind these nominees. But again, we've talked about it on this broadcast, Jay. It's not going to just be Republicans. You have 26 Democrats up for re-election, 10 of them in states that Donald Trump won, 3 of them who also voted for Neil Gorsuch, and 3 of them voted for Amy Barrett as well. So, Jay, I really think that a high 50s number is possible in the Senate. I could point to you to the states where I think you might get Senate Democrat votes, but to the question specifically asked, I think every single Republican is going to vote for the nominee no matter who it is.
All right, so here's what Chuck Todd said to Dick Durbin, of course, one of the leaders of the United States Senate for the Democrats. Here's what was asked and answered.
You have this political dilemma that stares, I think, you and Chuck Schumer really in the face as the two leaders, which is this. Staying united to stop the Supreme Court pick could cost you red state senators. Not fighting it as hard might allow the red state senators to get reelected and get Democrats in control of the Senate. That's your dilemma.
It is a dilemma in one respect, but not in another. I will tell you, the men and women that I work with on the Democratic side really take this seriously. They understand it's an historic decision. It's about more than the next election. It's about what the country, the United States of America, is going to chart as its course in the future on this Supreme Court. I think each and every one of them take that seriously, that personally. It goes beyond the next election.
All right, so let's talk about what that means. Okay, so you can have a political fight. But I think one thing we've got to be crystal clear, and we said this at the beginning, I want to say it again, is what the Constitution says about the nomination process itself. There is a role for the Senate. It's called advice and consent, and they can say no. But the nomination factor, who makes the decision, there are two people that know probably right now exactly who the nominee is. That is the President of the United States, and if he's notified the nominee itself. That's it. Those are the only two that I think we'd actually know, maybe the White House counsel, of course, and some really close advisors. But it's a closely guarded move, but this is an exclusively vest with the president. Andy, I don't think we can say it enough.
No, the Constitution, and I read the Constitution literally, and I read it as an 18th century document that it is. And it says, by and with the advice and consent of the Senate, the president shall appoint ambassadors and other public ministers and consuls, judges of the Supreme Court. We now call them justices, but it's judges of the Supreme Court and all other officers of the United States whose appointments are not herein otherwise provided for and which shall be established by law. So it is a uniquely presidential decision made by the president alone, with ultimately the decision being advised and consented to by a vote, now simple majority, in the United States Senate.
Go ahead and take a call.
Yeah, let's go to Terry in Wyoming on line 3. Terry, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi, Terry. Go ahead.
Hi. Listen, I couldn't agree more with you about being a constitutionalist, but the very idea of a judge is one that is impartial, that he rules only on the law that he is given. There is no right-wing or left-wing judge. There is only an impartial judge. And he judges on what is the Constitution or the law or the will of the people.
Well, the will of the people is not what they rule on, okay? That's not what a judge does. That's what a legislature does. That's what elections mean. The justices of the Supreme Court determine if something is constitutional or not, Cece. That's the focus.
That's right. It's written down in the document. So, again, it isn't the will of the people. It's not what the...
Well, the will of the people was getting the Constitution adopted.
That is correct. And, right. and electing legislators.
Right.
But it's not... The will of the people does not control how a judge interprets the Constitution. He should read it. And he or she should read it and abide by those words strictly.
But Harry, Professor Hutchins taught constitutional law for many decades. So, but the thing is, the judge—it's not like they just read it and say, "Here it is." You always are trying to apply the law to the facts and then determine. But oftentimes, the issue before the Supreme Court is, for instance, a case coming out of the lower court. It would be, was the 11th Circuit or was the certain circuit's decision in conflict with the Supreme Court of the United States, or did their decision infringe upon fundamental constitutional rights, freedom of speech, freedom of the press, in its, you know, conclusion. That's how a case is framed before the Supreme Court.
Absolutely. So the Supreme Court justices should emphasize the text of the Constitution. They should be prepared to offer something called counter-majoritarian analysis. In other words, if the text of the Constitution controls the result, and it should, the Supreme Court justices should be prepared to vote in a particular decision in a way that may indeed disfavor the will of the people. The will of the people is exercised by voting for the legislature, by voting for the president. The president selects judges who should adhere to the text of the Constitution no matter what.
So, Than, on Capitol Hill, the process will go there, and the president will make the nomination tonight, official. It then goes to the Capitol. What happens?
Well, if I can put people inside the room just across the street from me, inside the Senate Judiciary Committee, Jay, they have a staff assembled and a large staff assembled in preparation for tonight. They will probably work around the clock and then much of the next week in the initial stages of this, which is compiling a questionnaire for the nominee to submit along with boxes and boxes of records. You're talking academic writings, legal rulings, biographical information, all of which will be compiled, and they will begin to prepare for Senate hearings. Jay, meanwhile, the nominee has a very big job ahead of them as well. He or she will have to staff up, get a staff to prepare them for the hearings, to prepare them for meeting with senators on Capitol Hill. It will be, I would say, about a seven-week process leading up to those hearings. Jay, I think that will happen in late August, but the 7 weeks between now and then, it will be jam-packed for the nominee. It will be jam-packed for the Senate Judiciary Committee. You're talking about very senior-level attorneys that that committee will bring on to be employed for just 2 or 3 months. That's how important this process is inside that committee.
Yeah, it is important, and Andy, you're focusing on the constitutional authority, but this is the president said this is correct. This is a lasting legacy of a president.
Well, it is. I mean, when you think about it, the decisions of the Supreme Court of the United States have enormous impact on even the most minor situations that we face. Property rights, the rights of liberty, the rights of free expression, the rights of freedom of religion, and things like that are all set by constitutional decision of the Supreme Court.
That's absolutely right. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, your calls. Here's what we want to know from you. We're going to take more of your calls. What are the issues that matter most to you? What are you looking for in a judge? That's what they're called in the Constitution, actually. Supreme Court judges, but we call them justices. But the Constitution actually calls them judges. I had that come up, actually, once in an oral argument where Justice Stevens pointed that out to one of the other lawyers that was called somebody a judge, and one of the other justices said, that's justice, and Stevens said, well, no, actually, the Constitution says judges. We'll take your little Supreme Court trivia for you. 1-800-684-3110. Back.
It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble. The life of an American pastor hangs in the balance. Pastor Andrew Brunson is on trial in Turkey. As you know, Pastor Andrew is facing charges of, quote, Christianization, on trial for simply living out his Christian faith. He could spend the rest of his life in a Turkish prison. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're aggressively advocating for Pastor Andrew's freedom. We've mobilized our international offices. We're working directly with the State Department and alongside members of Congress. The Vice President is involved, and we've submitted a critical legal document to the United Nations. Stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. Fight for the freedom of Pastor Andrew. It's time to bring an end to this sham trial. It's time for Pastor Andrew to come home. Add your name to our petition right now online at ACLJ.org.
All right, so it's decision day at the Supreme Court of the United States. Here's what we've got. The decision will be announced tonight at 9 o'clock. At this point, the president is the sole arbiter of that. He's the one who makes the nomination. That's his role under Article 2. And then it will go to Article 1, which is the Senate under our Constitution, for advice and consent. And if that person, if that man or woman is selected, they become a nominee to the Supreme Court of the United States. They then become a justice on being sworn in, and their authority vests from Article 3. That's the way the Constitution works. So let's go to the phones. We're taking your calls, 1-800-684-3110. We want to know what issues are of concern to you. Let's go ahead and go to Jonah from New York on line one. Hi, Jonah.
Hey there, Jay. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Question is about this this definition of originalists and strict constitutionalists, and if you can help us and listeners understand, you know, the context at the time of the forming of the Constitution and today is so different. The world is so different.
Yep.
And the matters that they have to take up are unimaginable relative to the time the Constitution was written. So how does a justice who comes from that sort of shape, how do they handle the context? How do they form a decision that makes sense in a modern world,
sure,
but yet stays within that kind of thinking philosophy?
Well, two things they can't do. One is they can't make the law. So the law that's usually being challenged, if there's a challenge going up to the Supreme Court of the United States, that's normally what it is, has been a law that's been passed by Congress or maybe a state that a party feels like is infringing on a fundamental right of theirs. Whether it's equal protection of the law, whether it's a free speech, freedom of religion, whether it's Second Amendment, whether it's 14th Amendment, whatever it might be. So that's how the case comes up. When we say strict construction, I think this is important. It's a really good question. You're right in the sense that the founders could not think of every issue that might come up. But I will tell you this, as someone that studied the Constitution and has litigated before the Supreme Court for over three decades, it is miraculous, the nature and scope of our Constitution, of what it is able to handle, Andy, as even the issues are complicated, because they are more complicated technology, but there's still the freedom of speech. I mean, yes, in those days it was a pamphlet and a printing press. Today we have the internet and a whole social media platforms and things that they, maybe the founders, I'm sure, could not even imagine or fathom. But it's interesting that the constitutional analysis still fits within those modern technology moves.
Yes, the question that the caller made, Jay, was an excellent question. I mean, what does a constitution that was formulated in the 18th century, how is it applied to things that happen in the year 2018? But that's, like you said, a pamphlet may have been the mechanism. They may not have had texts and emails, but the underlying concept is what's important. Freedom of speech, freedom of expression, religion. Congress shall make no law regarding something the Constitution says. And Justice Scalia says, when it says that Congress shall make no law, that's what it means. Congress shall make no law whatsoever. So we can apply the framework of the Constitution to the 21st century world, and we do that all the time. The things that we are not wanting to do is create rights and liberties and concepts and ideas that were not there, like Griswold v. Connecticut, that said a penumbra of rights. Where's penumbra occur in the Constitution?
That doesn't mean, by the way, what that means is the states get to make those decisions. You just don't federalize every particular issue. Now, having said that, you look at, when we talk about strict constructionalists, textualists, originalists, we're looking at someone that understands that if you're going to change a constitutional framework, there's an amendment process. It's not the nine justices making that call if there's a need for an amendment, or if the country feels, and we've had amendments in the past. And that's the way that the process is supposed to work. But Cece, you said this earlier. I think it's important to reiterate this as we get ready to get to the end of the first half of this broadcast. It's already gone. By the way, we're taking your calls at 800-684-3110. And that is, what are you looking for? What do you want to see? Not just in the terms of strict constructionists, contextualists. What kind of judicial philosophy? How do they view themselves as judge?
Yeah, very conservative. And they take this job very seriously. And someone who I think has the courage and conviction to stay true to the Constitution years down the road, that won't change their position.
Yeah. This is the tendency, of course, in Washington, is things morph, and that's just the nature of the beast. So, Than, what are you looking at? What are you expecting to see come about 9:02 tonight? Eastern time?
Well, about 9:02, I think you'll see the Capitol Hill, especially the Senate side, really spring into action, Jay. And there will be a fight, no doubt about it. But I just want to make this point to a couple of our last callers. I think it really speaks to the strength of the president's list that he put out, that it's been out for how many months now? And you really aren't getting any substantive attacks yet on these nominees. I mean, you're hearing attacks on their faith. You're hearing attacks about their conservative ideology. But, Jay, nothing that would disqualify any of them from serving as a justice on the United Supreme Court. I think that's why it was so smart of the president to put this out on both policy and politics. On politics, it clearly motivated to the polls for him and a Republican Senate. And on policy, Jay, it's just made up of superior judges, qualified judges. So tonight, I think what you're going to see is you're going to see the far left wing attack this nominee, but it's going to be personal attacks. It won't be very substantive because, Jay, there's just not a whole lot substantive to attack nominees on.
Everyone on this list is well qualified to serve on the Supreme Court of the United States. And I think the ABA will come out with that statement. They already have on a number of these judges. There was an interesting question. We're taking more calls when we come back from the second half of the broadcast. By the way, if you're on the line, hang on. We'll get to you right after the break. But I want to say this. It was interesting. One of the questions that came in was, why does a judge who has recently been confirmed by the Senate have to be confirmed again for the Supreme Court? And that's because that's what the Constitution requires. So the fact that you're confirmed for the district court or the court of appeals is not mean you get a free pass. People's views change, things change. So what happens is there's a new confirmation process, Andy.
That's right, Jay. It's a different position, too. Yes. I mean, being a district judge, being a court of appeals judge, and being a judge on the highest court of the land is a different position. Now, you would think that if they voted for a particular judge 2 or 3 weeks or 2 or 3 months earlier, and that judge would now come up for the Supreme Court, that they would vote the same because nothing has changed in the interim. But that doesn't necessarily carry the day.
What we've got to look for is going to be reaction. Harry, you know, you've been studying all of the nominees. What's the consistent that you see through all of them?
Well, the consistent theme offered by all of the leading nominees is a willingness to apply the original text of the Constitution to the issue at hand. Secondly, all of the justices, in my opinion, reject the notion that the Constitution has an evolving meaning. And third, all of the justices, they have a proclivity to send at least some cases back to the states. It's important to remember that we are a federalist system.
What does that mean?
That means that power is not centralized necessarily in the federal government. The states have rights. So, for instance, if you take the Roe v. Wade case, prior to that decision, the states had the right to decide whether or not a woman had the right to an abortion. The Supreme Court took it out of the hands of the states, and they did so without reference to the text of the Constitution. It was grounded largely in penumbras, or, as I like to
emanations.
Say, in fictional analysis.
Yeah. You know, even supporters of the right to abortion will say that the Supreme Court's decision in Roe didn't have a firm constitutional foundation. A lot of scholars have said that over the years. Having said that, we'll find out where the next justices are, but I'm sure that'll come up in the Supreme Court hearings and the nominations, and their answer is going to be, I'm not going to discuss, it's called the Ginsburg Rule, a case that is likely to come before me. That should be the rule. I think Justice Ginsburg was right on that. All right, we're taking a break. We're halfway at the halfway point. If you're not getting the full broadcast, go over to ACLJ.org, over to Facebook and Periscope. We're streaming it there. You can get the next 30 minutes. We'll take your calls at 800-684-3110.
The life of an American pastor hangs in the balance. Pastor Andrew Brunson is on trial in Turkey. We're working directly with the State Department and alongside members of Congress. The Vice President is involved. Stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. Fight for the freedom of Pastor Andrew. It's time to bring an end to this sham trial. It's time for Pastor Andrew to come home. Add your name to our petition right now online at ACLJ.org.
back to the broadcast, everyone. It is decision day, and that is the president tonight will make his announcement as to the Supreme Court nominee. That's his authority under Article 2 of the United States Constitution. It will then go over to the Senate for advice and consent. That's Article 1. That's the Senate's role in all of this. They will determine whether that nominee will pass through the United States Senate. If that person is confirmed, they will then become a judge, or we call them justices, but the Constitution says judge on the Supreme Court of the United States. And interesting there, that is their Article 3 authority. So that's the way that all three aspects of the Constitution are in play here. We're taking your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. I'm going to ask everybody this question because, and I'll save my response for last, but I want to be clear as we start the broadcast out. Nominees coming tonight, what we're looking for, how we react to it. So I'm going to start with Andy. What are you looking for?
I'm looking for someone who reads the Constitution as a document that was enacted in the 18th century, but has relevance for today as it is written, a static, stagnant document. I'm looking for them to apply American law to the American Constitution and not foreign law. Someone who reads it in context, someone who reads it strictly, and someone who reads it literally. That's what I'm looking for.
Cece?
Same thing, except I would add, again, I just want someone who has the courage to maintain that that status of being a strict constructionist.
Where do you worry about when you say courage?
Well, I just think, you know, we get people on the Supreme Court that we think are conservative and will follow the Constitution. And then maybe 5 years down the road, we get an opinion that just shocks us because it does not follow, you know, anything. It doesn't follow what we think. How they should rule.
Yeah, that works on both sides, too. I mean, John F. Kennedy appointed Byron White, one of the most conservative justices of the Supreme Court of the United States. George H.W. Bush appointed Justice David Souter, who ended up being one of the most liberal votes on the Supreme Court of the United States. So you never, part of this is you don't ever know where it's going to come out. But again, the process of vetting, you look at, here you got nominees that have either heavy academic writings or a number of opinions. Some of them, many, many opinions. So they've been serving on the Court of Appeals for a long time. Some not. Amy Barrett, but you have a lot of academic writings. Harry, what are you looking for?
I'm looking for someone who can articulate their commitment to the strict text of the Constitution. Secondly, someone who is prepared to reject the view that the Constitution is evolving, that it's a living document. And third, I'm looking for someone who is prepared to apply the original text to current circumstances. And I think all of the leading nominees fill that particular, meet that standard. Sorry.
All right. So, Than, let me let you, what you're looking for, and then I'll tell you what I think.
Yeah, I think just a record of fidelity to the Constitution, Jay, and I think a commitment to that. By the way, that can be demonstrated through legal rulings or academic writings, and I think all of the nominees we've talked about have demonstrated that. Jay, I actually think, and this is something that maybe is surprising to some, I think if you look at academic writings or rulings, sometimes a judge is going to have to come to a ruling that is constitutional, yes, but maybe does not align with their ideology.
No
so
question.
Look, on some of these nominees, you might look at cases, you might not like a particular ruling. That actually might be a tally, so to speak, in favor of that judge rather than opposed to it. So look for fidelity to the Constitution rather than just specifically your preferred issue interest.
Let me tell you what I look at as someone that's litigated for 3 decades before the Supreme Court of the United States. I'm a textualist. I like to see what the document says, as Andy said. I want to know that they understand their role as a judge, that they're not the legislature. And as Than just said, which is a good point, you know, I think it was Justice Scalia said, a good judge, good justice, will come to a decision sometimes that they personally don't like, but that's what the law requires as they interpret the Constitution. And interpret a statute as they apply the Constitution to that statute or a particular law that's up before them. And I want someone that understands the three branches of government and what the role of each of those branches are. And tonight at 9 o'clock, I believe we're going to have that nominee. We'll find out who it is. But if you look at that list that the president's been dealing with, I think the list speaks well to a constitutional conservative, someone that understands what the Constitution means, how it should be applied, protect free speech, free exercise of religion, will understand the scope and nature and the protections afforded by the 14th Amendment and others. So there's a lot at play. A big decision. All right, we're taking a break. When we come back, there's going to be more of your calls. Our phone lines are open for you at 800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Back with more in just a moment.
The life of an American pastor hangs in the balance. Pastor Andrew Brunson is on trial in Turkey. As you know, Pastor Andrew is facing charges of, quote, Christianization, on trial for simply living out his Christian faith. He could spend the rest of his life in a Turkish prison. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're aggressively advocating for Pastor Andrew's freedom. We've mobilized our international offices. We're working directly with the State Department and alongside members of Congress. The Vice President is involved, and we've submitted a critical legal document to the United Nations. Stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. Fight for the freedom of Pastor Andrew. It's time to bring an end to this sham trial. It's time for Pastor Andrew to come home. Add your name to our petition right now online at aclj.org. It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
Welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. We're taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110. That's 800-684-3110. Interesting comment came in on Facebook. Nettie writes, and I'm afraid that the left will fight hard no matter who is the nominee. What is the best way we can help to get the nominee in the Supreme Court? I'll go to Pam Bennett, our Director of Governmental Affairs. You'll be dealing with that in about 901.
Yeah, there will be a fight. I mean, and Jay, you played the sound earlier from Dick Durbin saying that there will be a fight because this is about the future of the country. On that narrow point, Jay, I agree with him. But look, the future of the country, the American people went to the polls in places like West Virginia and Indiana and North Dakota, Montana, Missouri. I could go on down the list and picked this president to appoint the next nominee in the Senate to confirm it. So, look, it's about the future of the country. And if you think this nominee should be confirmed and you live in one of those states, communicating to your senator that you support this nominee and that you will only re-elect someone who votes for this nominee, Jay, I think that's probably the most effective way to get that nominee across the line.
All right, we're taking your calls, 1-800-684-3110. We want to know what you're looking for in a Supreme Court nominee. We're going to go to Lynette's calling from Long Island on line two. Hi, Lynette.
God bless you, Jay. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I regularly pray for each and every one of you.
Thank you.
My comment is that I'm hoping that we'll have a Supreme Court justice who will look at the Constitution, then look at the situation, the matter that's been brought before them, and use only those two entities to arrive at their decision, not someone else thinks about it or what their own feelings are or are the politics of the day or what the outcome will mean for something future or anything like that. But I'm just hoping that we'll have somebody that will be, as was mentioned, courageous enough and ethical enough just to use just those two things and actually arrive at their decision.
Well, Lynette, everybody here was shaking their heads when you said that. I'll start with Harry Hutchison, our professor, but I will tell you that everybody on this panel was shaking their heads in agreement. Go ahead, Harry.
Well,
Lynette's made a great comment.
Thanks for the call. Essentially, I'm in total agreement. It's important for the nominee to articulate a commitment to the strict text of the Constitution. I think if you look at the record of all four of the leading contenders, each of them has articulated a commitment to the strict text of the Constitution. They reject the notion that the Constitution is evolving. And thirdly, all of them agree that as judges, they must serve as umpires.
Yeah, and that, you know, that's an important role too, Cece. We talk about the role of this judge and, you know, calling balls and strikes, calling as you see it.
Right, absolutely. I mean, they have to have wisdom in taking these facts and applying the Constitution to it. And it's not just, you know, reading the Constitution, but again, having that wisdom to take facts and apply the statutes and law to those facts.
But Andy, one of the things that people, I mean, we're getting these comments are coming in on Facebook and Periscope, and people are concerned about, well, you know, politically, they get under a lot of pressure. There's the media. How does all of that impact? And the answer is it should not.
Well, it should not. That's what's called judicial restraint. In other words, you understand your position as a judge is not a position of a legislator. Legislators make the laws. If you don't like the Constitution, you change it by amendment. We've done that over 20 times. But when the Constitution is what it is, you read it as it is, and you restrain yourself from imposing your personal views. In other words, when you look at the Constitution, you never say, I feel. You say, I see and I read.
Yeah. All right, we're taking your calls, 1-800-684-3110. I want to make this get this comment in, though. Orlando on Facebook writes, and Than, this is really aimed at you and what you're seeing, and that is, if, in fact, Democrats were to take control of the United States Senate, will they try to hold the court at 8 justices until the next presidential election?
Well, I think this nominee is going to be confirmed before the midterms, Jay, so I think there will be 9 justices when the next court sits. But look, if the American people decided to send a Democrat Senate to the United States Senate, then yeah, that would be a check on the president's authority. Look, at this point, they've chosen the President Trump and a Republican Senate to confirm his picks. Think back to the last year of President Obama's term, though, Jay. What did the American people do? They wanted a check on President Obama's ability to nominate. They sent a Republican Senate, and his nominee was checked. So there is a dual role here. But ultimately, Jay, this nominee, he or she's going to sit before the next midterm, I believe.
Yeah, I think that's right. But let me just say this. Here's what the Constitution says. Article 2 authority vests in the president to make the nomination, but he doesn't get to put them on the bench until there's advice and consent from the United States Senate. So, I mean, that's in the Constitution. So that's the Article 1 authority of the Senate, to advise and consent on the selection of Supreme Court judges. So all the politics do play into it. And then I told you the Article 3 aspect of it is once that person's confirmed, they end up becoming an Article 3 judge, and their power emanates from Article 3 of the United States Constitution. Let's go to Jerry in Rhode Island. He's calling on line 3. Hi, Jerry. Welcome to the broadcast. You're in there on the air. By the way, before you go, Jerry, our lines are jammed right now, but I'm going to try to get through a couple of calls here to clear them up for the last segment of the broadcast. So 800-684-3110. But go ahead, Jerry.
Thanks for all the comments and the analysis to educate us, especially Joan of New York question.
Yeah.
Than's comments were the Senate Judiciary Committee is going to delve into the past by their academia and their writings, but the only way they're probably going to do is a personal attack. Hasn't this list compilation probably already done that to foresee what the attacks would be?
Well, look, I mean, it's a great question. And, Jerry, the fact is this has been the president's been the most transparent of any president I can recall who put forward the list while he was running for president and then updated the list as he was serving. So, look, have they had a chance to vet these individuals? You bet. But, look, vetting is a process that goes on, Andy. We know that. But these people have been out there. There's no question about
that.
That's
right. I applaud President Trump for having put this list out during the campaign, then he added to it. So he said to the electorate, when you elect me as president, you also have a list of people that I'm going to pick the next Supreme Court justice or justices from. Here they are. Here's my list. So go start your vetting of them right now if you want to, because I'm picking from this list. That's unheard of. That's never happened in the history of presidential elections that I can recall,
yep,
that a president is committed to appoint from a specific list. I think that transparency is very applaudable.
All right. Tyrone's calling from Indiana. Line 1, you're on the air.
Yes, hi, Jay. First of all, thank you guys so much for what you do to help us be educated in these areas.
Sure.
And number 2, I have a question and a comment. My comment is, I'm agreeing with everything that you guys are saying about reading the Constitution for what it actually says instead of trying to legislate from the bench and coming out with their own ideas. My question is, why don't we have a system in place that makes sure that these justices interpret the Constitution and read it for what it is, instead of just relying on them to go with whatever they feel is what they, you know, believe?
Free will, it's called. Justice gets confirmed, and they're justice for life. It's a lifetime appointment. They're not, and I think that makes sense. They're not subject to political whim, Harry. They're not subject to the political discourse of the day. But in the world that we live in, and we've seen this in Supreme Court history since the beginning of our country, when the Supreme Court first sat, these things, including nominations and Supreme Court justices, tend to evolve. Some do become more conservative. Others don't. There have been some justices that have stayed very true to their convictions when they were before the committees, but then some change over time. And they're human beings. So human beings have human failings like anybody else, and that's just the nature of it. But what you do is try to get the best information you can, Professor Hutchison, when you're making the process. So that's the vetting process that not only the Senate goes through, but also that the White House went through in coming up with the list, and then where President Trump came up with the list. And there are groups that participate in that, of course. But ultimately, as I said, it rests with the president, Harry.
Absolutely correct. So I totally agree with your analysis. And I would simply add the following. President Trump has successfully made appointments to the United States Supreme Court a political issue. And so if you believe in the appointment of strict constructionists to the United States Supreme Court, then you have the right to vote your preferences as a member of the polity. And that is exactly what has happened. Secondly, I would add, President Trump has improved the process by providing a list so that many of these individuals have already been vetted, pro and con, left and right, conservative and liberal. And so we know where they stand. And so I think the public will have a clear indication of where the nominee, whoever he or she is, stands tonight at 9:02.
I think that's exactly correct. All right, we're taking a break. When we come back, last segment of the broadcast. One line open. Maybe it's for you. 1-800-684-3110. That's 800-684-3110. We'll take your calls again. So last segment of the broadcast here. Big decision. Supreme Court of the United States. Said I've been litigating there. I've litigated before Justice Kennedy since the first time he was on that term. On that court, he came on in 1987, I believe, 88? What year?
Justice Kennedy?
Yeah.
It's a Reagan appointee. I can't tell you
I think it was 88, I think. It was right at the near the end of his term. And I've been litigating as long as he's been on that court. I've been appearing before him. All right, we'll take your calls when we come back. I got a couple lines open, 1-800-684-3110. Don't forget the ACLJ's matching challenge. Any amount you donate to the ACLJ, we're getting a matching gift for. We appreciate that at ACLJ.org. More of your calls and comments at 1-800-684-3110. That's 800-684-3110.
It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble. The life of an American pastor hangs in the balance. Pastor Andrew Brunson is on trial in Turkey. As you know, Pastor Andrew is facing charges of, quote, Christianization, on trial for simply living out his Christian faith. He could spend the rest of his life in a Turkish prison. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're aggressively advocating for Pastor Andrew's freedom. We've mobilized our international offices. We're working directly with the State Department and alongside members of Congress. The Vice President is involved, and we've submitted a critical legal document to the United Nations. Stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. Fight for the freedom of Pastor Andrew. It's time to bring an end to this sham trial. It's time for Pastor Andrew to come home. Add your name to our petition right now online at ACLJ.org.
Back to the phones. We're going to go to Pat calling from New Mexico on line 4, and we're taking your calls at 800-684-3110. Last segment, we try to get to all the calls that we can. Pat, go ahead.
Oh, thank you. Good afternoon.
Sure.
I just wanted to make a comment about the Supreme Court. In the election cycle, I've always tended to be left-leaning,
yep.
But I just thought it was a brilliant move by President Trump to release the judges that he was choosing beforehand, and I read up on all of them. And so I voted for the Supreme Court this cycle, and the other candidate, I was just, you know, I mean, I just got grown kind of disgusted with.
But, you know, it's
race.
Interesting you said that, Pat, because this was I've never seen, and I'm trying to think if there's ever been another campaign, Andy, where a president put out the Supreme Court nominees, at least the initial list, prior to his... prior to him, and while he was a candidate,
never. I've never heard of it, and I've been voting. I think the first election I voted in was Richard Nixon's election.
Say, he wasn't for Thomas Jefferson.
Yeah, no. Thomas Jefferson was a very good friend of mine. You're no Thomas Jefferson.
I know.
But let me just say, I do not think that any president has done this. But what he did, what President Trump did, was say, "Here's who I'm going to appoint. It's going to be from this list. Now go and look at them and make a decision." And this caller said she's usually left-leaning liberal, but she voted for the Supreme Court, which means she voted based upon what President Trump said he would appoint to the Supreme Court, and that's very commendable.
We have something we've been able to pull out of our archives. I think this would be an appropriate time to do it if we can, Will. That is, we have I talked with Chairman Grassley during the Gorsuch nomination about the role of advice and consent and what it means. And he is, of course, the chairman of the Judiciary Committee. This would be a great time. Let's go ahead and play it.
The Constitution says advice and consent of the Senate. Explain to the American people, and you're the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, what that advice and consent means, the role of the Senate here.
Well, first of all, advice is one thing, consent's another. So every member of the Senate has an opportunity to talk to the president ahead of time who they think should be on the Supreme Court,
right,
or the type of person,
right,
that he should be considering. And I had that opportunity along with Senator Schumer, Senator Feinstein, me and Senator McConnell to actually visit with the president. But people don't have to have a face-to-face meeting with the president. They can talk to the White House counsel.
Right.
They have an opportunity to write letters. They have opportunities to give speeches. But everybody has an opportunity before. Once it's done, it's whether you're going to do one of three things. Are you going to vote yes and give consent? Are you going to vote no and not give consent? Or the Senate, under the Constitution, according to even Senator Reid, doesn't have to take any action whatsoever.
It's very interesting. I'm glad we have that. We should probably see if we can edit that up into some segments over the next week or so that we could air, because I think those would be really helpful. I'm going to go right back to the phones because it is that last segment of the broadcast. And again, if you want to talk to us, 800-684-3110. Larry is calling on line 5 from Texas. Hi, Larry.
Hey, Jay. How are you?
Good.
Good. Hey, listen, I want to first of all thank you for all you're doing. I tell you, the Stand for Righteousness is amazing, and we serve more folks like you, but I do appreciate all you're doing.
Thanks, Larry.
I've got a two-part question for you. One is, what is your take on the Republicans and their vote for the Supreme Court justice, as well as the Democrats? I know Dick Durbin is telling the Democrats to make your stand. Don't worry about your political life. Just make a stand. And we know that their political life a lot of times is more important than anything else. But
How
you see that going? And then last question, North Korea. What do you see happening there? We've heard all the talk.
Yeah, let's save North Korea when we've got Skip and Wes Smith with us on that. We'll obviously get into that later in the week, so we'll deal with that then. On the Supreme Court, look, I mean, I'm going to go to Than on this quickly, but I think that the nominee is well qualified, and that in and of itself should be the base upon which the Republicans stick together. As the Democrats would if it was their candidate, and if the candidate was well qualified. And I don't think that is going to be an issue for the Republicans. But then you also have John McCain may not be back for the vote.
Well, I would say to Larry what you just played from Chairman Grassley, that advice is one thing, consent is another, Jay. Dick Durbin and Chuck Schumer and Kamala Harris and all of them can give whatever advice they want, but ultimately, Jay, their vote's not going to be needed to provide consent for this nominee. There are going to be 50 Republicans, even if John McCain can't be there, to confirm this nominee, just like there was for Neil Gorsuch. And Jay, I think there will be a number of Democrats as well. Remember, Joe Manchin, Joe Donnelly, Heidi Heitkamp, all voted for Neil Gorsuch. There are seven more Senate Democrats running in Trump states. And Jay, Doug Jones is up for re-election in 2020 as well, down in Alabama. I wouldn't be surprised if his vote's available as well.
Interesting you said that. James on Periscope just put in, I'm calling my senator, Senator Claire McCaskill. What do you think of the political side of this? I think what Durbin said was honest, and that they're in a bit of a conundrum. Yeah,
absolutely. And I'm originally from Missouri, so, you know, Claire McCaskill is a Missouri senator, and I think absolutely she will be concerned about this. She's a Democrat, but she will be concerned about how
this
will play out for her.
Did she vote in favor of Gorsuch or not?
She did not, Jay, but interestingly, she did not vote on Amy Barrett's nomination, so there would be an open question there.
So she voted no on Gorsuch?
She voted no on Gorsuch, and she was not present for Barrett.
Okay. Well, I think you kind of know where that's going. I mean, what do you think, Than, on that?
I think she starts as a no, but Jay, yeah, when you're just a month or two before going for the voters,
true,
and that's the last thing,
true,
you leave in their minds,
true,
I wouldn't count it out.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I think the stakes are higher this time.
Yeah,
it's just like
right,
when we talk about confirming for a circuit position versus the Supreme Court, I think the stakes are higher for her.
All right, let's go take Wally's call from Springfield, Illinois on line three. Hi, Wally.
Hi, Jay. How you doing?
Good.
Quick question. Of the four judges that are left, which one has the most verifiable record as far as being a strict constitutional textualist?
I'm not going to pick a favorite. I think all the four finalists, and as well as the judges on that list, would meet the requirement of a textualist of the United States Constitution. We're not going to get into the particulars on who it is, especially we did last week. We gave that great analysis on that, in-depth analysis, but this is the day the decision's being made, so we're going to know that nominee tonight, so I don't want to speculate on that. But I will say this, that if you look at it, Harry, you look at the nominees and their positions on constitutional interpretation, I think we have a lot to look forward to.
Absolutely, and all of the potential nominees have a long record in terms of academic writings and judicial opinions, which support the inference, the strong inference that all of them are strict constructionists with respect to the Constitution. They do not believe in the evolving meaning of the Constitution. That's very, very important. And they're unwilling to insert their preferences into the text of the Constitution. So I think their record will support the inference that all of the nominees are well qualified.
And we talked about this weekend because obviously it's been the topic that we've been dealing with. And you look at the nominees that are being put forward, and these are all well qualified candidates.
Any one of them would be an excellent justice of the Supreme Court, in my opinion.
All right. There you have it. All right, that does it for the broadcast today. Tonight, 9 o'clock, we're going to know who the nominee is. I'm going to be on with Sean Hannity during his radio broadcast today. I'll be on again tonight talking about the nominee. Like I said, I've litigated in front of the Supreme Court, including Justice Kennedy. From the moment he got on the bench, we've been there. We've had cases up there to the moment he retired this term. So there you have it. So this is obviously a big decision. Don't forget our matching challenge campaign at ACLJ.org. Any amount you donate to the ACLJ, we get a matching gift for. That's ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org. We'll have a lot more analysis tonight and tomorrow. So stay tuned on our social media platforms for that. And we'll talk to you on the broadcast tomorrow.
The life of an American pastor hangs in the balance. Pastor Andrew Brunson is on trial in Turkey. We're working directly with the State Department and alongside members of Congress. The Vice President is involved. Stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. Fight for the freedom of Pastor Andrew. It's time to bring an end to this sham trial. It's time for Pastor Andrew to come home. Add your name to our petition right now online at ACLJ.org.